So here we are, Worldwide Live, over the internet through BBS Radio. Thank you all for being here. It is today Monday, April the 17th, 2017. A Monday night special with Winfrey and Terry Brown. My name is Gijs Minderhout, located in Paradise, California. This is, as usual, a simulcast with a conference call. We have a few people that called in already. Thank you for being here. If you want to, please say your name and location.
It's John from Las Vegas.
Good evening, John. Welcome to the call.
Hi, John. This is May from Concord.
Good evening to you, May. Welcome.
Good evening, Gijs. Has anybody ever just watched a group of...
Good evening. Welcome to the call. Please say your name and location.
Hi, good evening. Hi, this is Eric in New Mexico.
Welcome to the call, Eric. Good evening.
Hi, good evening, everybody.
So anyway, I almost missed the call because I was watching a group of gnats wondering if they were interdimensional beings or not.
All right.
Well, no, because they would be, you know, it's raining out here, right? So I'd walk over, put an umbrella around them. They go away from the umbrella, but they're flying out in the rain. And then I would watch them, and they would kind of disappear, but I wouldn't see them fly off anywhere. And then they would come back in a group, and I'm thinking, okay, I wonder if they're going through a doorway I don't see. I've never watched a group of them before.
All right. Good evening. Welcome to the call. Please say your name and location. Welcome, Ed.
Yes. Good evening. This is Pat from Sacramento.
Hello, Pat. Welcome back.
Thank you. Yeah, I've been listening on the internet.
All right. Well, good to hear your voice tonight. Thank you for being
here. Thank you. Good to be here.
All right. And again, I welcome all those that are joining in through BBS Radio. Thank you for being here with us tonight. We're still a few minutes away from the hour. And we will wait for Wynn to present himself here shortly. I want to say welcome again to those that are online listening in through BBS Radio. You are listening. Oh, good evening. Welcome to the call. Please say your name and location.
Hi, it's Prudy in North Carolina.
Good evening, Prudy. Welcome to the call.
Thank you. Hi, everyone.
All right, we are at the clock of the top of the hour. And, that is the helicopter. Yes, so hang in tight. Wynn will be here in just a moment. Good evening. Welcome to the call. Please say your name and location.
Good evening, hi. This is Cleo from Connecticut.
Good evening to you, Cleo, and welcome to the call.
Thank you.
All right. Good evening. Welcome to the call. Please say your name and location. Two people came on board. If you want to, please say your name and location.
Hi, it's Michelle in Cambria.
Hi, Michelle. Welcome. How are you?
Hi, I'm well. How are you doing?
Hi.
I'm good.
And more people have arrived. Welcome to the call. If you want to, please say your name and location.
It is Wynn.
Hi, Wynn. Welcome to the call.
Is Terry here?
Terry's not here, no.
Well, she'll be here in a moment. She was just screaming to me.
Get off the call!
I want to just hi, Chris. Welcome.
Hey, guys. Hey, Mr. Perry.
and there was another person that came in the last minute or two.
It's Deb in Oregon.
Hi, Deb. Welcome.
Hello. Hi. How are you? Thank you.
All right. And I see Terry. Good evening to you, Terry. Thank you for being here.
Hey, welcome. Good evening.
All right. I'm going to turn things off. Last one. Welcome to the call. If you want to, name a location.
Yes, this is Terry from Dallas.
Welcome to the call, Terry.
Thank you.
All right. The things are off. We're all here. Now, Wynn, you sound kind of in the background, and so do you, Terry.
Oh. Okay.
Oh, no.
Well, you sound really loud. Am I better now, Hayes? Is that better?
You are. Yes, you are.
Okay. All right. Here we go.
All callers are muted and they can unmute themselves. This conference is being recorded.
This is April 17th, 2017, and the day after Easter. And I'm going to do a replay tonight. And I keep trying to do this. Let me just see here. Let me make sure it's here. I got my clock. You know, the replays don't seem to go back. What is the...
Don't they go forward?
No, they... Well, no, how can you do a replay going forward? Huh?
Well, I don't understand what you said. What does it mean that they don't go back?
Well, the replays on free conference calls don't go back past 2012, okay?
Oh.
That's what I meant, okay?
I see.
I wanted to play a thing from how the Elohim created the universe. So here's one. And I mean this has been our ongoing series, and we'll probably do some more of these, but to me it's one of the most amazing things we've ever done. Okay? Let's hear.
So who's going to write the book, The Way the Universe Was Created According to the Elohim?
11/26/2012. I know we should do that, shouldn't we? I know that. I mean, there we go. I'm loading it up at 54 minutes. So if I get rid of some of the initial BS at the middle, the beginning, hopefully it'll play. Play file fails. That's okay. Here we go. Again.
If you go in, it's for like 10
right,
minutes.
That's it. So, I mean, just think about it, guys. I think that we actually have a series of calls from the Elohim that we did with Terry Channeling, going into kind of as much detail as a human can understand, because it goes beyond our understanding how this works. But actually, a description of what it was like to go from basically formless to form, and to crystallize form. And I think there are a lot of quite surprising things. And someday, I think this series is going to be studied. And people are going to look back on us. Because a lot of things make sense. So hang on a second. I'm going to start. What is the date? It is November 26, 2012, and this is Winfrey. I'm not sure I even like Howard Stern's, but what I realized was, and you know, I'm not doing this because I planned to do it this way. You know, when they started talking to me, I started thinking of very serious, sacred ceremonies, and how do you ever put this out into the world? And, you know, kind of Daphne's a little bit that way, where she's very, she likes ritual. I shouldn't talk about her. She'll get mad at me, but she likes rituals. I don't think, she comes from a background of traditional Catholicism,
And that she loves the rituals in that. And it's interesting because Carla Ruckert goes to church every Sunday, you know, it's like I really see the benefit of going to church every Sunday, not because necessarily you believe everything they say or all of the ways it's presented, but because if you're in a good church, there's probably a chance that there's an uplifted, heartfelt vibration in the room. And there's camaraderie. And there's people that will have someone to turn to if things break down. And sooner or later, they're going to break down. Sooner or later, it's going to happen. I think it's inevitable, particularly in the cities. And, you know, when we did our... Some people think it's going to break down this December, but I don't think so. That's not what our sources are saying. And unless there's some fast one pulled by somebody down here to create a world war or something, if they can do that, it's not going to break down because of the universe or because of Bible prophecy. And our sources have said we're just going to go through it, and it's going to be like the next day. But early on, they did give a date that they saw was, and probably after that date, things were going to change dramatically. They gave a year, not a date. And I don't know if this date still holds up. I decided I wasn't going to worry about it. And I suggest to all of you not to worry about it either. I'd be far more concerned about, is your heart open right now? And if it isn't, what do you have to do to get it open? Because once your heart's open, you're going to die anyway. It doesn't matter whether it's going to be in December of 2012, if it's going to be in 2017, or it's going to be tomorrow. We're all going to die. And if you're listening to these calls, you do get the idea that you continue, that you don't really die. Your body dies. And you have an energy body in the astral that continues. And if that energy body is not very hip, it continues as a ghost. And if it's hip, it'll start reaching. And we're going to do more calls about this because I think this is an important topic. And one of the things that I learned in asking questions was that there is a connection between what your beliefs are and what happens to you when you die. And because when you're on the first leg of the other side, which is the astral, when you're on the first leg of the astral, you have your memory. And your memory isn't gone yet. You haven't gone into amnesia. And then there's places where, if you're really going to go up, Terry says there's a tunnel of light. And you have to find that tunnel of light, or you have to look for it. And if you're just ending up on the astral with no guidance, your beliefs that you died with are going to be with you at that point.
I just wanted to clarify that one of the ways of getting to the higher realms is through the tunnel of light, but
right.
There are other ways to get there also.
Well, we'll have another discussion about that, but not tonight.
Okay.
But that there was something I had read somewhere, and then I asked our sources about this, and they did confirm it. And what I read was that many people who are traditional Christians, when they die and they end up on the astral, they're busy looking for Jesus. And if they don't see Jesus, they don't do anything. They get stuck in the astral waiting for Jesus. And, you know, a good question would be, well, how about if they have their hearts open? Well, the way they have their intention at that point might even supersede where they go. So if that's true, then I can see that it's rather important to have a really good idea what to look for when you die, so that if you do want to graduate this realm, you make the choices that would help you do that. Because I would assume, I don't know this for sure, I don't think I asked this question ever, but I would assume that there's got to be some negative guys on the other side that are trying to trip you up and trap you, and I would think so. But then I would ask the question, if the negative can do that, why doesn't the positive send the guy that looks like Jesus down there to release everybody? These are all questions we're not going to ask tonight, but we're going to go more into it fairly soon, because it's an important topic that is going to be important to every single one of us and the people we care about to know how that works. And once you get that inner kind of energy that just keeps continuing, and you're not worried, and you just say whatever happens is okay, well, you can't get to that if you're afraid of dying, if you're worried about your family, if you're worried about your children. And I'm not saying you shouldn't worry about your family and worry about your children, but I'm not sure worry is productive. How do you be productive? I remember in one session we did where they were talking to somebody who was having their children be somewhat errant, is that the right word, Terry? Errant?
You mean they're wandering away, they're not quite on track?
Something like that, errant, yeah. And they were just all concerned about their children, and the answer was to them, to their question was, be a good example. Be successful. Be loving. So that you can draw them to you. When you're sitting in a state of worry about somebody, you're not very attracting to them. In other words, they see you worry and they stay away. Some people are that way. They gravitate towards you when you don't care. And when you're chasing them, trying to fix them, trying to make them better, they back off. They feel judged. They don't feel accepted. So when you have people like that in your life, probably the first thing to do is to accept them, accept their wayward ways, to accept, you know, that they may not be doing what you think is in their best interests, and realize that they are going through the lessons they need to go through. And I say that famous quote of William Blake, I said it before, and this impacted me when I was younger. And it was, it's the path of excess that leads to the palace of wisdom. And the path of excess, what is excess? Too much sex, too much drugs, too much this, too much greed. You know, you do all those things, and eventually you get to learn where they all lead in a very experiential way. Now, it might take 500 lifetimes or something, but at the end of it, you'll end up wise. Probably the reason I can do that job, this job, is because I've done that. So I can see what people are going through. I can see it from an overwhelming, encompassing perspective. And I even think Terry can see it. Can you see it, Terry? Can you see all the stuff?
Yeah, I can see it. It's like I've gone through a lot of stuff, too, and it really helps me to understand, you know?
Yeah. So you see, for someone to be a really good, I hate to use the word teacher, I don't know a better word, but really good at creating empathy for lots of different people, then one would have had to go through a lot of lifetimes and have had to live through the path of excess leads to the palace of wisdom, okay? And, you know, people who are angelic and they're wonderful and I love them usually don't have this kind of wisdom to get into the nitty-gritty of other people's understandings. But they can hold really high space. They can do that. And I don't imagine that every angelic being that comes into this realm gets stuck and goes through hundreds of lifetimes. Some of you are going through hundreds of lifetimes. This is your 576th lifetime. And the thing about it is that it's really hard to break the cycle of reincarnation, the cycle of being attached to this realm, the cycle of wanting to help your children, the cycle of saying, I really want to be successful and I didn't make it this lifetime. And you keep coming back. And probably those of you that keep coming into these calls might fit that criteria. And this is something that stands potentially as a beacon to get you out of those patterns. So with that all being said, it's 7:21, and Terry, I promised them in my announcement, which I just got out in the nick of time, in my announcement, I said that we were going to do another session about how the Elohim created the universe. And did you guys notice we never run out of topics? I can't believe it myself. When we started doing these calls, I said, what are we going to say every Monday? And then I said, what are we going to say every Monday and Wednesday? Well, Wednesday, we don't have to worry about topics because you guys said questions. But no matter how much we talk about this, we never run out of things to talk about. And actually, I don't think it's what we talk about. I think it's coming together. It's creating the space. It's creating the connection. And it's not about being interesting. It's, you know, if you've been listening to a couple of weeks ago when Carla Rucker was on, there was a phenomenal bit of information that came through that was having to do with the fact that you can know everything you want to know about the shift, about opening your heart. You can have the most esoteric understanding, and even with all of that, you may not graduate. And someone else that doesn't know any of it could graduate. And so it's not about knowledge. You know, a lot of people think it is. A lot of people think we're one of the in-group. We know about the shift. And look in the mirror in the morning and make sure your heart's open. And if you're going to worry about anything, worry about your heart being open. Of course, the worry will keep it from opening. So now you have to figure out how to walk through this dilemma of opening, having your open heart, but you can't use your willpower. You can't use your willpower to open your heart. How are you going to do it? Well, that's why we keep having these calls, because if there was, you know, if there was one thing that I could say that everyone could do and their hearts would open, then I would say it. And better people than I have challenged this particular topic, and they haven't said it. They haven't said it in a way that works for everybody. And it can't work for everybody because each of you needs to hear something different because you're all totally unique. And you might be listening to our calls for 3 weeks or 4 weeks, and you're enjoying the energy, and then suddenly one thing is said that strikes you to the core, and that's what you needed to hear to change your life. And you never know when that's going to come up. So, and everyone needs something different. So it may be the thing that changes your life, but it won't be the thing that changes someone else's life. So we have this universe that started from nothing except a bunch of energy beings, and they, I assume, got bored or got creative. They're going to talk to us so they can tell us, and I'm not going to repeat. We have about 5 or 6 calls of this topic. And if you go into the Spirit Channel and do a search on how Elohim created the universe, you'll find those calls. And I recommend listening to the whole series because it is really fascinating. First of all, if any of you have doubt that we're really talking to who they say they are, and I think that doubt is very healthy, you have to ask yourself, where do these answers come from? Because it certainly didn't come from Terry, and it's hard to believe there's someone that's making them up that's not who they say they are, and it doesn't sound like it could come from something negative because they're loving and they're caring. So how the Elohim created the universe on the spiritchannel.net, look it up and listen to that.
Muted.
Put them on a CD and put it in your car when you're driving to work or something.
Unmuted.
Because it's a fascinating story. And the way it started, the way free will was granted, the way that each part of the universe, the Ra group calls it the Logi, the sub-Logi, and the sub-sub-Logi. And, you know, it starts off at the center of the universe, and then each part of the universe sets up its own rules, and then the things underneath it set up the rules underneath those rules. So, for example, it's like walking into a big company, and the company has a mission statement. It has a certain set of overviews about how everything should operate. And then there's all these departments, and each department runs in its own way. And then it comes down to the people in the department, and there's little signs in the bathroom that says, wash your hands before returning to work. You see, I mean, I'm oversimplifying it, but that's the universe steps down so that each little section makes its own rules. So, for example, our sun makes certain rules for the solar system. Each planet makes rules for itself. The earth makes rules for us. We make rules for our children when they were growing up. And this all started because of free will. And does the whole universe run by free will? We'll find out. The negative is part of free will, but then they don't allow free will and the people to get hooked into them. But above them, there's free will. They had the free will to be negative, to be service to self. And DNA plays a part in this, in that beings that were developed, DNA, there's 12 strands of DNA, and each strand of DNA is an expansion, like an antenna, into the greater universe. And as a strand of DNA gets activated, you start to be able to tune in to a bigger hologram. And you have more awareness. And the first seven strands relate to your first seven chakras. And after that, it goes out of your body. And you start feeling space outside your body. Now, that doesn't mean you're leaving your body. It doesn't mean you're floating around in outer space and peering into other planets. I don't think it works that way. Maybe for some people, but not for me. But I can feel the space when I'm in an expanded space, and I can feel when I'm sharing an expanded space with someone else. And I know that all of us here, many of us, have felt those expanded spaces, particularly on our Sunday calls. So I'm going to call in the light, and I hope I can start at a place where, if you're listening for the first time, you don't feel lost because you haven't been part of the series. Father, Mother, God, we ask for the presence of the light to surround and protect Terry, myself, everyone on this line, and everyone listening to the replays. And we see ourselves in the flow of energy radiating from the center of the universe through the galaxies, through the Milky Way, through the outer energy fields of Earth, through our bodies, and into the center of the Earth. And right now, we invoke a group energy connection while maintaining the sovereign integrity of our souls. And we invite those sources that are positive, service to others, honoring the law of one, to join with us, and we create a protected space that only the positive has access to. And anything not of that nature must leave now. And do we have our sources present to explore this topic with us and make any comments on any of the things I just said?
Thank you. We greet you in the love light of the one infinite creator. This is the 26th of November, 2012. And we take a moment and we are available to each and every person non-linearly. As we are speaking to Terry, we are not linearly with only Terry. We are non-linearly with each and every person who wishes to make contact with us at the same time. We are available tonight for your questions, Wynn, and in what you have discussed, we see that all life is a flow, and it is in movement. It is in transition, day to day, and the transition continues after the body leaves, in the soul, the entity, you continue. And you can, in your lifetime, in the earth realm, can learn the difference between what is your body and what is you, the you that is you, the you that you can center and you can feel the essence of you. And one of the biggest gains a person can make in the earth realm is to learn to distinguish what is yours and what is another's. And once you can distinguish that, then you know what you can take with you. You can take your memories with you. You can take your essence, your being, with you. When one tries very hard to borrow things that are not really theirs, for instance, if one has a hero and one is next to them, one lives near them, and tries very hard to imbibe the essence of them since they are the hero and have qualities one would like to take on. It is by your own self having those qualities, taking those qualities on and making them your own, that you can gain wisdom and knowledge and experience from them. Do you have questions?
No, I made that speculation earlier about people when they die, they have the potential to remember things that they learn when they're alive, when they're in their astral, and the astral is a departing point for some people, not everyone. Many people just stay in the astral. And what does a person need to know in their mind to propel themselves out of the astral? Now, I assume that they have to have the energetic openness as well as something in their mind. Does everyone remember when they get into the astral? Their physical, their most recent physical body.
First of all, needs to get out of their mind and into their heart. As the mind can figure. However, it does not give them the proper energy just by thinking something to move with their whole heart and intention.
Mm-hmm. So assuming somebody has opened their heart, are there decisions that they can still make in the astral from their mind or from their awareness? It's not a mind. I don't know if you would call it a mind. For example, are there choices given to them where they can say, I want to go this way, I want to go that way, that the knowledge of those choices to someone with an open heart would make them more more discerning?
These are choices that they have made before they transition.
Mm-hmm.
These are choices that stay with them, and it is like walking a path, and as the body transitions, the being continues to walk the path. So what they have set up for their future continues, and they can continue on the other side to walk their path.
So we have to learn to walk our path in this lifetime while we're alive.
That is correct, to be centered, to know that it is not the outcome of the thing one is working towards as much as it is the way that the individual integrates himself with others in working towards an outcome, and the learning that the individual gets by the interactions with others if they are working towards an outcome, people tend to lose sight of the inner workings of things and just focus intently on the outcome. It is the interactions with others, the loving relationships, the teamwork, the working together, the opening of the heart that are the things that move an individual on his path and allow him to move through his transition without being addicted to some outcome of making money or having a new car, some addiction to an outcome in the messed universe, which would then put him into conflict when he does move into transition.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Messed means matter, energy, space, and time, by the way. It's
yes,
vocabulary.
It is the manifestation universe.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to go back, and we're talking about how the universe got created, and we know that we had a conversation a long time ago about how the Elohim created an amoeba, and were so excited when they saw that amoeba and two amoebas exchange energy with each other. Well, somehow we had to go from an amoeba to an animal to a human. And a question that I've never asked, were Elohim coming into this realm and working in light bodies of some sort or manifested bodies originally and working on the creation of the beings, or was it all done by proxy from outside this realm, projected inside into this realm?
Possibilities and potentials are set up outside of the universe and refined and fine-tuned within this universe. There are the potentials for life, the potentials for bodies, the potential for amoebas. They have all been given possibility parameters. And we have, in some manner, been a discoverer of potentials in how we can develop potentials.
But was it all set up with potentials from sources that were outside of the realm projecting into it, or
it was not so much outside of the realm projecting into it. It was the fabric as it developed of all the potential is within the being of all that is.
So, if we go back to the amoeba, did the amoeba have potentials to evolve itself on its own and to become a higher form of life without any outside manipulation?
The answer is yes. However, with manipulation, it gives it direction and allows it to transform and move into ways that it may not have without manipulation.
So if there was manipulation, how did the manipulation occur? Did it occur? What I'm trying to say is, did it occur from outside the realm doing manipulations, projected into the realm, or did it? I know at one point there were beings that actually were manipulating and doing genetic splicing and everything else, but initially at the beginning, before that occurred, how did the manipulation occur that caused the evolution?
There were certain parameters set up that when you had flows of energy at certain vibration that came near other flows of energy of certain vibration, that they would be attracted towards each other. They would attract, they would clump together, they would form channels of energy within them. And this is all intelligence. And the intelligence was then being molded by these different flows that it came into contact with. So the outcomes would be similar whether one was on a planet or in a different galaxy on a different planet. The outcomes would be similar. However, the nature of the galaxy or the planet system would be different, and because of the difference in the nature, they would then have different options for development, but not other options for development. For instance, if a certain element were missing from a certain planetary system, then they would not have the same opportunities for development that another one would have, which contained that element.
Now, if we look at life on Earth, and we look at all the thousands of different kinds of flowers that all look so beautiful and also different, all the different animals, all the different, even the dog, the breeds of dog, and all the different kinds of humans, it's like, it seems to me that there was, had to have been some kind of intelligence creating such perfect specimens. And I read an interesting book recently that had, it was a fiction, but it told the story of how millions or trillions of years ago, there were companies that would create different life forms on contract. Like a government would say, we need a government of a given world would contract with this company to say, we'd like an animal that looks like this and we'd like flowers that look like that. And they would genetically create that and sell it to the planet or the government of that planet to distribute on the planet. That's probably not the way it occurred, but I'm just asking the question, trying to get specifics of how something as simple as an amoeba, even over so many millions and or trillions of years, could end up with such a myriad of different specimens of life through the universe. But we don't know what's in the universe. We'll just talk about different specimens of life on planet Earth. Is there a way to understand that, to grasp it? Terry, I don't hear you.
Can you hear me now?
I hear you now.
Okay. Give us 2 minutes.
Did you understand the question?
Yeah, the whole call dropped out. I dropped off and I had to get back on. Give us a minute and see if we did not hear the question. However, we think we have some idea as we have mentioned earlier, the parameters are set up in accordance with frequency, in accordance with flow, in accordance with electricity available. The constituents on a higher level determine what is possible. Then, as you have, say, a gaseous formation, and in the gaseous formation, there in the center is non-reflection and a density, a coagulation of elements. And on the outside, you have reflection of light and a heat. Within these circumstances, there appears the ability of life. All of everything is not aware, but has a potential of awareness of intelligence. And within the intelligence of the minerals, the elements within the cloud, the individuals, which are not yet individuals, can develop. The amoebas, under the right circumstances, can move from the inanimate formations and can begin life. In other words, there are certain given potentials wherein life can occur and can congeal and become condensed into focusing mechanisms larger or smaller. And depending upon how the elements are formed and are made available by the circumstances, you have the beginnings and potentials for life to become, to manifest, to become even aware.
You know, we know that I know of at least 2 alien groups that we have confirmed with you previously were into genetic manipulation. one of them supposedly created humans by as a hybrid, and another one was able to clone themselves genetically. Now, if they were able to do that, I would assume they were able to do a lot more than that. And so the question is, how much of all the variations is caused by those kinds of manipulations, and how much was caused by celestial Elohim, and how much was caused by some kind of natural evolution?
We look at it as a series of pictograms. The largest would be the potential, and then within the potential, what has manifested in the form of energies that could then give a life potential to further expression within that circumstance. And then within that, it's like a series of spheres within itself, and another sphere within itself, and another sphere within that, wherein each one further defines what is available, what life forms will be expressive or will begin to take shape. There is when one gets to the refinement of humans, then humans can begin to further refine the species that they are working on. For instance, dogs in the Chinese culture were bred to be small and for the royalty to be to their specifications that could be small and cuddly and not overwhelming and could be a companion. And they were specifically bred for that.
So in other words, there was genetic manipulation.
That is correct.
By?
Because there is genetic manipulation now going on with corn. Corn was developed over 1,000 years or so in South America, and the corn began as grass, and the indigenous people worked with the corn over hundreds of years to manipulate it to become the corn on the cob. And then, as we have now genetic manipulation with the GMO corn, of introduction of pesticide genes into the corn, which begins to turn the corn into a poison.
Thank you. You know, we're coming probably at 7:59. Doug hasn't cut us off, but we're coming to the end of the hour, and I see a lot more questions. I'd like to pin this down a little bit more, and we'll continue next time. I don't know if it's going to be next week, but we'll continue again to see what we can learn about all of this. And I thank you for coming forth. And I'd like to thank everyone who's been supporting and buying our stuff over the past few days. And it's a great way to support the things we're doing and offering for free, the more important things. And so my appreciation. And thank you, Terry. Thanks to the volunteers. And we're going to wish everyone a good evening tonight. And we'll see you on Wednesday when we ask your questions.